From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today, a special edition of our program. We're bringing The Exchange out of the studio and into a cozy public space for conversation, the Java House in downtown Iowa City, before a live audience. This hour, we look at the emergence of the Tea Party as a grassroots organization. A number of Iowa Tea Party organizers are here to share their thoughts. We'll ask what these Tea Party activists want, how they view their movement, and how they plan to influence politics in the state and in the country. Whether you're at home or here in our live audience, you can join the conversation with your comments and questions. What's the Tea Party movement all about? We'll try to find out during the next hour in this live broadcast of The Exchange from Iowa City's downtown Java House. First, this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today a special edition of our program. We brought The Exchange out of the studio and into a public space for conversation. We're here at the Java House in downtown Iowa City before a live audience. It's a chance for us to interact with the community of Iowa in a new way, and perhaps in the future, Iowa Public Radio will be coming to a coffee house near you. Well, anyone who is following the 2010 midterm elections knows that Tea Party activists are angry, motivated, and determined. That's why this hour we look at the emergence of the Tea Party as a grassroots organization. A number of Iowa Tea Party organizers are here to share their thoughts on a number of questions, such as where did the Tea Party come from and what's this anger all about? How do Tea Partiers view their movement? How does the Tea Party fit in or clash with other political parties? And how do they plan to influence politics in our state and in our nation? Well, whether you're here in our live audience at the Java House, at home, wherever you are, you can join the conversation this hour, live on the radio, with your comments and questions about the Tea Party. How do you view the Tea Party movement? What do you have for our Tea Party activists? 1-866-780-9100 for your questions, comments, or criticisms. 1-866-780-9100. We also have an email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.com. .org. Let me introduce my guests. Today we have on our stage lined up Republican Dave Funk of Des Moines. He is a candidate for the nomination to face Leonard Boswell in Iowa's 3rd congressional seat. Dave Funk, welcome to you.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Ryan Rhodes is the state coordinator of the Tea Party. He is with us as well. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Tamara Scott is the state director of Concerned Women for America. She's spoken at a Tea Party rally. Welcome to you, Tamara.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Jeff Licky is from Dubuque. He is an organizer with the Dubuque Tea Party. Jeff, welcome to you.
Thanks, Ben.
And you've brought a high schooler with you, Jeff Schuler.
Joe
Schuler. I'm sorry. We've got Jeff and Joe. Joe, welcome today. And you are at what high school in Dubuque?
I am at Dubuque Senior High School.
And you're a junior, you told me before.
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to this. And you are a co-organizer of the Tea Party in Dubuque. Welcome to all of you. We also have Ed Wright, chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. Ed, we're going to ask you to sit still for a minute as we get our bearings on the Tea Party and ask a little later how the Libertarian Party may fit into this picture. First of all,
thanks, Ben.
You're welcome, Ed. Let's set the foundation here. A lot of our listeners would have heard the Tea Party in conversations in the news, but may not have a great grasp about what this movement is all about. I'd like for you to tell me very concisely. Let's get a few voices here. What is the movement all about? Where did this anger come from? Who wants to start there, Dave?
I don't know that I'd call it anger as much as I'd call it accountability. You know, our government is a representational government, and there's really four legs to that chair. We've got the three branches of government up in Washington, but people tend to forget, because we've had a pretty successful system for a long time, that we the people is where the power really comes from. That's why the beginning of the Constitution starts out with we the people. And you look at all of our founding documents and what the framers intended, clearly we are, the Tea Party are just regular people from across the political spectrum finally paying attention and holding accountable those in Washington for what they're doing to us.
So I hear from you, Dave, it's about accountability. What else is it about, the Tea Party movement? Jeff from Dubuque.
Yeah, Ben, I think I was
politically inactive for a long time, enjoying life.
Inactive.
For a long time, enjoying life like a lot of people. And I saw spending for a long time out of control before the current administration. When George W. Bush and Nancy Pelosi came up with the first economic stimulus package with the checks for $600 and $1,200.
Fall of 2008, we're in this big economic panic, and the stimulus rolls out under George Bush, yeah.
Exactly. And my eyes woke up when George Bush said, I'm going to abandon free market principles to save the free market. My eyes were open, and I started digging into what was going on. Rick Santelli had his rant on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. It went viral on the Internet, on YouTube. And I started looking for a Tea Party. I heard about it, and that's how the Dubuque organization started. And we've got three key things we're focusing on: a return to constitutionally limited government, fiscal responsibility, and free markets. And that's it, and educating people about those things.
What else Tamara, do you want to add to that?
Sure.
What haven't you heard that you think the Tea Party is about?
Well, I don't see the anger either at the parties I've been to. People are encouraged. They're excited to be taking a part. Many have never taken part before in the process. For me, it's not I think if the week that I was participating in that first Tea Party was the April 15th, and we had just been called, if you were a Christian, you'd been called or likened to a terrorist by the Homeland Security Department. And the Tea Partiers were being called protesters. I'm not a protester. I was promising to fulfill my obligation as a citizenry. Mm-hmm. And so that was it. It was more accountability. It's a mixed group of people. You will see Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents, people who have been involved for years, people who have never been involved, but people who see budgets ever growing, bailing out, redistribution of flesh. And I say flesh, not wealth, because we're not taking from the rich to the poor. We're taking from the working to the welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people wanting to get involved just to make a difference, and I encourage it.
So is this in part, in large part, a religious movement as well?
I think there's everything. I've stood next to atheists. I've stood next to Christians, to Catholics, to people
of
all.
So we don't want to confine this to the area of Christian conservatism.
There's more an issue of freedom at stake, really. And when you're doing your civic duty and holding them accountable, then what you end up doing is really what the Constitution and the framers had in mind.
But okay, we can get into this a little bit later, but I mean, big words like freedom and the Constitution, we know, well, we have courts to interpret our Constitution here in Iowa and also at the federal level here. So
we have courts to uphold our Constitution. They've usurped it in interpreting it however they feel like.
Okay. So this stimulus package, specifically, this seems to be a point of origin for the Tea Party movement. What about the stimulus package? If we can take our mindset back to the fall of 2008, I don't know about you, but I was in a dreadful panic that we were going to spiral into something we had here in the 1930s. We don't have that today. Some are saying, correct me, if this is conventional wisdom, I think, that's out there, that while not perfect, the stimulus package avoided some of the worst of what could have happened to us. Counter that. React to that.
No, Ben, I'm going to have to disagree on your premise here. In 2008, we had about a 6.5% unemployment rate. Today, it's well in excess of 10%. The real unemployment rate, not the official one, is significantly higher than that. We've got an economy that not only has gone into a deep recession, but despite manipulation of figures, it sure looks like we're going to be in a recession for an awful long time. The biggest problem I see today with the government is its continued interference in our economy at every level, whether it's excessive regulation, whether it's overtaxation. We don't have a revenue problem in government. We have a spending problem. We have to stop the stupid spending. We have to stop the government's intervention in our economy. Businesses like the Java House here did not exist 20 years ago. This is an offshoot of the Starbucks idea. It's just a local franchise, a local business. These things grew because they filled a market need. A market was created. If we don't have discretionary income, there's not going to be a lot of people standing out at the front here spending $4 for a cup of coffee.
Okay, other views on the stimulus package? Jeff from Dubuque.
My problem with the stimulus package was that the sky was falling at the time. Everybody was Bernanke and the rest of them were crying that if we don't do this, our economy's going to crumble. And we need to let failures fail. It would have been painful. It would have hurt. Mm-hmm. But we would have bounced back much quicker.
Okay, let's go to our first caller. Mike is calling from Waterloo. Welcome, Mike, to the exchange. To join our conversation, by the way, 1-866-780-9100. Good afternoon, Mike. Mike, are you there? Mike, not there. Do we have another caller? Let me pick up. Let's go over to Ed Wright, who is chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. We didn't mean
Thanks,
to put
Ben.
Your back up against the wall there in the corner there, Ed, but
it's a position I'm accustomed to.
Ed is the chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. Where do the Tea Party? You've heard a little bit of this. It's hard to cover this in an hour. There's so many facets when you're talking about a new movement. But how would you characterize the areas where the Libertarian Party matches up with the Tea Party movement and the areas perhaps where you don't see eye to eye?
Well, thanks, Ben, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. The Libertarian Party is a political party, third largest and fastest growing political party in the United States. And as such, we've been in operation since 1971 and have consistently advocated smaller government and more freedom.
So that's a commonality. That's something you all have. This is all about. This is about limited government, accountability. So we've got those two words. What else, Ed?
Very much. Economic freedom as well as personal freedom are dimensions of libertarian philosophy. It's kind of the ultimate live and let live philosophy. And the Libertarian Party, as a political party, functions to put in elected office people who have demonstrated a commitment to that libertarian philosophy of basically allowing cognitive adults to do any peaceful activity they choose to engage in to the extent that it doesn't interfere with other cognitive adults' freedom to do the things they choose.
Okay, very quickly before our break, where do you see you disagree with the libertarians disagreeing with the Tea Party movement as you understand it?
There might be some disagreement on particular factions within the Tea Party movement, just as there are disagreements within factions within the Libertarian Party from time to time. But comprehensively, it's very nearly a total perfect fit. Very
okay.
nearly.
We'll get some more opinions in just a moment. We have to take a short break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're looking at the emergence of the Tea Party. And we have a number of Tea Party activists at the Java House in downtown Iowa City taking the opportunity to step outside of our studio walls to join the community also not only with our voices but with our bodies out here. And if you would like to join our conversation, if you're a Tea Party activist, if you share some of these concerns, if you might be critical of what you heard about the Tea Party, perhaps you can air those criticisms. And we'll get our telephones working. I think they've been told they are working. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. And when we come back, I want to ask our panelists here, our guests, to tell us how the Tea Party fits in with the existing parties, besides the Libertarian Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. Can we place them on the political spectrum, or are they outside, above, below, wherever? I don't know. Maybe they're not anywhere to be found on the political spectrum. We'll find out when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Today we're broadcasting The Exchange live from the Java House in downtown Iowa City, taking our show out of the studio and to a place where conversation is found in the community. Here at the Java House today, we're focusing on the emergence of the Tea Party. And we have a number of Tea Party activists from the state participating in our show. We'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. I want to turn to Ryan Rhodes, Tea Party state coordinator, to ask the question we went into the break with. How does the Tea Party fit in with the other parties, the established parties, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party? Where do you see this fitting in?
Well, I think for right now, it's not a political party in any way, and we're looking to find candidates in every realm to start getting back to the basis of what these parties are supposed to be doing, and that's adhering to our constitutional limitations. I do also want to comment real quick on the stimulus package, because the whole idea that it created or saved so many jobs, how many more businesses, if they were just received deregulation and got to keep that money in-house, how many more businesses could have created or saved or worked on getting building themselves in a much greater way than the government ever
But wouldn't
could?
Some say, certainly in the banking sector or in the subprime mortgage fiasco that we had, that it was the lack of regulation, the deregulation that we went through in prior administrations that led to the circumstances we had in the fall, came to a climax in the fall of 2008. Dave, go ahead.
Once again here, this is a great example of how effectively people have been stonewalled on this. The Community Reinvestment Act that Jimmy Carter started and that Bill Clinton strengthened caused forced banks to loan money to people they had no business loaning money to. The problem in the banking industry and with this real estate bubble, you can look across the country. It doesn't matter if you're in Charlottesville or San Francisco or Washington, D.C. Those artificial markets, Vegas is another example, where we had huge run-up in value above what we've traditionally had. That was government interference inspired. And we had too much regulation in the banking industry instead of letting it operate as the free market should. And that's what caused the problem.
Okay, I want to really move on back to the relation to the other parties. But quickly, Joe.
Sure. Well, I think that we can all agree. You know, you mentioned the Depression before and how you saw very many similarities between the crisis that we're in right now. And
analysts did. I was quoting analysts.
Sure. And I think if we look back at history simply, we can see that the New Deal and FDR, those policies necessarily did not bring us out of the Depression, but rather World War II did. And so I think we're seeing kind of a repeat with the Reinvestment Act and bailing out of banks, that we're still kind of in this stagnant period.
Okay, very good. Let's get a real quick question and answer from Dave here. I'm still looking for the relationship of the Tea Party to the Republican Party. Dave, you are both a Republican and call yourself a Tea Party activist. How do you see that relationship right now?
I see the Tea Party as leaderless resistance to big government. I don't see the Tea Party as another party forming like the Bull Moose Party from years ago. It is very specifically regular people from across the political spectrum who are holding politicians accountable.
One Tea Party activist was quoted as saying, of the GOP, it's obvious they are trying to ride on the brand that we created. It's somewhat insulting.
Anyone can claim to be a Tea Party activist or a Tea Party, so I don't give that statement much credibility. I am a GOP candidate. I was at the Tea Parties. It is the core person.
Anybody
of
who here I have a problem with the GOP jumping on the Tea Party activist bandwagon? Jeff, you do from Dubuque.
I have a problem with the GOPs jumping on the Tea Party. I don't have a problem at all with the Tea Party taking over the GOP. I was never involved with the GOP in Dubuque County. I went to the caucus. I was at the county convention. I'm going to the district, and I hope to make it to the state and kick the rhinos out.
The rhinos. Who are the rhinos, Jeff?
The tax and spend Republicans.
Okay, so you're saying the Tea Party is not a one-to-one match with the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely not.
No. Okay, Tamara.
Jessica Hughes out of Texas, just a regular individual. I think she might have been a stay-at-home mom, and she had two FBI agents or people who posed themselves as FBI agents on her doorstep when she refused an Obama call. In fact, they talked about the phone call to her on her doorstep. That ignited her, and that's what got her involved in the Tea Party movement, and now she has a website and is a rhino hunter.
Right. You're perfect segue to go to calls. Let's go to Tim in Davenport. What have you been hearing that you like or dislike here? Or a question, Tim. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that, they're saying that deregulation is something that needs to be done away with. You know, everybody needs to be regulated in every sector of the society. There has to be certain standards and certain regulations that need to apply. And we've seen what happens when we deregulate things too far. Second, my question that I pose is, where do you think we would be today if the private sector is not spending and the government was not spending in the last year? Where do you think we would be today?
Let's get an answer for him today if we were sort of stuck in the mud, according to Tim and Davenport.
I'll go back to Thomas.
Yes.
Thomas Sowell in his recent book, The Housing Boom and Bust, and his lessons about the New Deal and what a failure it was, and I'll quote him, is that massive and unpredictable government interventions in the economy creates uncertainties as to what government is going to do next, as well as uncertainties as to what the actual economic consequences of government policies will turn out to be. The reason our businesses, our entrepreneurs are holding on to their money today, our investors are not investing, because they don't want to take a loss because of government interference. I disagree with our caller's question or his premise that regulation is a solution. It is. Government has never made anything more available, less expensive, and of higher quality ever. What makes us think that broad-based regulations are going to do the same thing?
Well, we trust our military to the government, don't we?
Yeah, but I'm a retired Army officer. I can tell you we have our own inefficiencies within the military.
But let's talk about our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan right now.
Sure.
Terribly inefficient. It's too bad that the government runs the military over in those countries?
No. When I refer to inefficiencies, I'm referring to how we acquire our equipment, the specific rules that are put on the military, you know, very burdensome.
I guess the point I'm trying to make perhaps too flippantly is that we trust our government to do something as important as the military, to protect our own soil here. Why can't we trust them to do other things as well?
Well, it goes back to the basis of in the military you have to have a commander, and we all enlist or swear an oath as officers, as I did, to follow those orders. The rest of us in society don't need to do that to live our daily lives. We don't need central control. It's been a failure every time it's tried.
Let's go back to the phones. We have a few minutes before we need to take a break. Max from Windsor Heights, welcome to our program. Max.
Very good program. I'm interested in the Tea Party. That seems like it's made up of not Democrats, but mostly Republicans or conservatives, has been my observation. But they talk about smaller government, and one of the questions I have is how do they feel about the military? I know Ralph Nader said if he was elected president, the first thing he would do is slash the bloated military budget in half and get us out of Iraq and get us out of Afghanistan. I think that really needs to happen. That's a huge, huge expense.
To go to break in a minute, I want to give time for a response, Max. Okay. Let's talk about foreign policy and the Tea Party. When should the U.S. intervene militarily in another country? Are we rightfully in Afghanistan and Iraq? Who wants to take on that?
Well,
Ryan Rhodes?
I'd be delighted to speak as Libertarian Party. Libertarian Party believes that foreign military intervention and adventurism is a big mistake.
In all cases?
In most cases.
Okay, so there is
our
a line
idea
there in which
of
we
having
say
a Department of Defense is that we would, in fact, defend the specific geography that our citizens occupy and not invade other countries or impose our will on them capriciously.
Tamira Scott, it looked like you had something to add to that point.
I go back to Thomas Jefferson, and the military people can correct me if I'm wrong here, but you know, he penned the Constitution. He knew what he meant when he wrote the Constitution, and yet he was the one who created the Navy to go to the seas and stop the pirates, the Muslim pirates, from robbing our ships off the shores of Tripoli. If you sing that song, then off the shores of Tripoli, you recognize that. And we make Keith Ellison from Muslim... congressman from Minnesota makes a big deal about Michigan, I think it's Minnesota, using the Quran to take his oath on for office because it was Thomas Jefferson's Quran. Jefferson had that Quran for no other reason than to know the enemy and to be able to better defeat those who were pirating the ships.
Okay, Tamara Scott, one of the people here. We're having talk about the Tea Party. We have a number of Tea Party activists with us this hour. We're broadcasting live from the Java House in downtown Iowa City. We have to go away and take a short break. But in the meantime, please give us a ring if you have something that you'd like to comment on. Perhaps you agree with something you've heard, something you disagree with. Perhaps you have a question or a comment to make. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. And when we come back, I want to address this question of the leaderless movement. I haven't addressed anybody on this platform as a leader, and they reject that as a descriptor. So we'll find out why the Tea Party doesn't seem to have a leader, or does it? When we come back, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange on this noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. A special edition of our program today, we brought The Exchange out of the studio and into a public space for conversation at the Java House in downtown Iowa City before a live audience, a chance for us to interact with the community of Iowa in a new way. Who knows? Perhaps we will be coming to a coffee house near you in the future. Talking about the Tea Party, the emergence of this grassroots organization today, the Tea Party specifically talking with activists here in Iowa, a number of them on our stage at the Java House. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. To run through our guests very quickly that we have, Republican Dave Funk of Des Moines. He's a candidate for the nomination to face Leonard Boswell in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Ryan Rhodes, state coordinator of the Tea Party. Jeff Lickey and Joe Shuler of the Dubuque Tea Party. They're organizers there. And Tamara Scott of Concerned Women for America. She's spoken at a Tea Party rally. Ed Wright, chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. Let's get to a lot of emails, a lot of calls. We want to get to as many of those as possible, so let's keep our answers brief so we cover some ground here. The leaderless question, does the Tea Party have a leader in the country, in the state? If so, why not? Ryan Rhodes.
No, not really. I mean, it's funny. Carville and Clinton both said that they want to go after 6 leaders they can find, which is why there was a website created called I Am the Tea Party Leader, and they can go find the 8-year-olds that are on there saying that.
So this was not created by the Tea Party.
What?
This website you're referring to?
The website.
Was it created by the...
It was created by a large group of Tea Party people as a mock. It's like the I Am Spartacus thing. Guess what? None of us can speak. We're all independent-minded people. If I tried to tell him how to vote, he'd sit there and laugh at me.
Okay. Let's say in early stages we can accept this in a grassroots movement. But as you develop, as you mature as a movement, maybe become a party, how can you hope to make an impact without a personification or personifications of your ideals in the form of leaders?
Well, ask Barack Obama about this health care bill that's now taken this, if we can make a difference. I mean, it's a matter of a massive amount of people saying, this is enough, let's stop, and let's actually have some real solutions. You'll see people emerging, hopefully Dave going to Congress, taking over, and as long as he stands on his roots, you know what? That'll be a part of what it'll be. It'll be in many one almost.
So, Dave Funk, you're a Republican. Are you a leader of the Tea Party in Iowa?
I'm not a leader of the Tea Party. I would call myself a member. I've been to as many events as I can get to. I look around at the Tea Party, as I said before the show, all the surveys are showing roughly a third, and a third. You know, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, a lot like our nation. And in the voting, the voters in the state of Iowa are basically split. So I don't see that you need a leader. Just
okay.
Because you make the assumption that every other segment of our society has to have someone at the top, don't make that assumption about the Tea Party.
Just trying to understand how it functions here,
Dave,
the way forward. So let's go to Shane in Des Moines joining us. Thanks for joining our program. Shane, what do you have to add to this conversation?
Well, I'm just excited that they're on the radio show today. I'm going to make an observation, and then I'm going to make a prediction. And before they turn red and get angry and counter me, I just want to say that let me speak my mind, and then they
okay,
counter me afterwards. The first thing is that Tamara said that it's a party of various religions, and you know, don't fool us. You know, I was watching back in the summer of 08, and summer of 09, excuse me, and they were hooting and hollering, turning red, you know, angry at the anti-government. And they said it's a party of many people. I see middle-aged, white, Christian, male and females. You know, I watch these rallies. I have never seen anything more white than it was even whiter than the Christmas we just had. But this is my observation. The Tea Party movement is a movement of hate and racism. And, you know, don't try to fool us. And second, you know, I'm going to make a prediction here. Let me break it down for you. You know, I want to thank you guys for the movement because we can label you as radicals. And you know what? My prediction here is the health care bill is going to pass. Financial regulation is going to go through some heavy changes, and then at the end of the day, the Tea Party is going to be an asterisk on the books. But you know, I want to thank you guys for having the guts to go on the radio and take heat from me. Thank you,
Shane from Des Moines. Let's have Tamara, since you were addressed specifically, respond to Shane.
One of the things I do is host a radio show, and I just interviewed Lloyd Marcus, who is a black person but refuses to be a hyphenated black African-American. He's just an American. And he, part of this movement, in fact, he's written a book, Confessions of a Black American. But this is exactly what I'm seeing. What Shane's just tried to do is label this group, marginalize this group by making us a group so we lose our individual rights, which are endowed to us by our Creator, as our forefathers said. Then by marginalizing us, he can polarize us, separate us, divide us, and then paralyze us, and no one will move forward because they're afraid they might be called hateful. And that's that attitude that stops everyone from moving forward.
Yeah, that's Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals to the T. I think we kind of expect that from a lot of people who aren't necessarily, you know, in tune with our views as the Tea Party. And, you know, we're kind of used to that. But I appreciate his criticism. But I do have to mention that, you know, I'm a 17-year-old student at a high school. You know, I'm not, you know, a white, you know, middle-aged man who's just, you know, out there to get angry and be anti-government. I think we've seen at CPAC lately that there was a huge amount of college students that were at this Conservative Political Action Committee conference that went on. So I really don't understand Shane's point.
Okay, very quickly, Jeff from Dubuque.
It's a difference in ideology. We believe in less government, the Constitution. Anybody who believes in the Constitution are free to join us. If they want less government,
well, I think we have some head shaking. I mean, when I say, okay, it's all a matter of interpretation. When we say, well, what does the Constitution mean? You say, we've got to abide by the Constitution. But first, we've got to interpret the Constitution. And going back to our stimulus debate we had earlier, first, we have various interpretations of whether and to what degree the stimulus package worked, which we aren't going to settle here. Jeff.
Therein lies the problem, interpreting the Constitution. Read the words. Don't interpret them. Take them for what they mean. That's what the founders wrote. Mm. Follow it.
Okay. We'll send that message out to all the judges in Iowa or the judges listening. You don't have to interpret. You just have to read. Okay. Keon in Waterloo is joining us by phone. Hi, Keon.
Hey, how you doing? I'm an African-American, and although I in some ways don't agree with this health care bill, I still have to ask the Tea Party, why now? Why after? I mean, even though what some of what you're saying is righteous, your timing, where was the Tea Party when the government was letting us be charged $4 a gallon of gas? Where was the Tea Party then? Why all the concern right now when there's a black man in office? Where was the Tea Party beforehand?
It has nothing to do with a black man in office, and it has everything to do with government interference in our economy. We haven't taken advantage of our own oil resources in the United States, our own energy resources, and that's how we wound up being held hostage by foreign powers to the value of a gallon of gas. And when it comes to health care, show me where government has ever, as I said before, improved quality, increased availability, and lowered costs. We have the best healthcare delivery system in the world. Mm-hmm. We have way too much government interference in the pricing in the insurance industry that doesn't allow us to benefit from the economies of scale in the free market.
Let me ask Jeff Licky from Dubuque to piggyback on Kian's point there. You said you came recently to the Tea Party, as most everybody in the Tea Party has. It's a new party. But what about when we talk about no intervention in foreign countries, only in dire need, if that's a Tea Party platform? Where were you all when there was a grassroots movement against the Iraq war, for instance, Jeff?
Keon asked, why now?
Why now? And that's part of the why
exactly,
now question.
Why now? As I said earlier, I was asleep at the wheel, as I think millions and millions of Americans were. They were going about their life. Things were going okay. We weren't seeing the progression over the last 100 years of our rights and freedoms being stripped away little by little by little over time. And that stimulus package under George W. Bush sparked us. I mean, the lights went on, and I think that's what happened. And Rick Santelli helped.
The rant you're talking about that's gone viral
I would
too.
Actually say that there's a whole difference. You put a frog in a boiling pot of water, he's going to jump out. You slowly heat him up, he's going to cook himself. And that's what happened. We let these things cook ourselves. I probably got involved with some of this stuff long quite a ways before the actual Tea Party happened. But so many people sat there and they said, oh, my God, look at this. This is 20% of our economy. That's turning the burners on full blast.
Let me share with you an email from Patrick in Davenport. He says, I think the Tea Party is great because it divides the right and the left will be more likely to win elections. He also adds, the Founding Fathers' worldview had nothing to do with our country today. Would they, meaning you on the stage, I assume, like to give rights only to land-owning men? Reaction to that comment?
I reject the premise of his statement. number one. Virtually everyone at the founding of the Constitution was either a landowner or about to become a landowner.
Nellie writes an email yesterday. Nellie says she received a robocall, asked if she supported Tea Party Patriots and Sarah Palin. Was this sponsored by the Iowa Tea Party? Do you support, she asks, Palin's death panel contentions?
Read the bill.
What's that? Jeff, you're shaking your head?
Absolutely. I mean, read the bill, H.R. 3200. The only way that Congress and the president in their health care bill can reduce the cost that they're talking about is rationing care. And Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, has said he's got his, I forget the name of it, the Real Lives system or something like that. They're going to look, if you're old and you're going downhill, you're not going to get the care you need.
Well, what I heard was that to be included in the health care bill was money to give you information about end-of-life issues and not money for death panels, too.
It's prepping people for a situation situations that have arose in Britain, which they're talking about right now.
They have death panels in Britain.
They are walking down that road where they're deciding whether or not they should put the money in to save that elderly person's life. And that's not a question we should have in a fair and just America.
Okay, so what do we do? What do we do while we're on the topic of health care? What do we do about the estimated 30, 40 million people without health care who many of them cannot afford it, and I'll grant you some of them are young, healthy people who just don't want to pay for it because they don't see the payoff.
There's three simple market-based solutions to that problem. One is major medical policies with a high deductible, very high limit. We don't need to have health insurance that's prepaid medical that costs us $600-$800 a month when you can go to eSurance.com and for a family of four buy a major medical policy for $150 in most of the state of Iowa. So if you break your leg, it's covered. If you twist your ankle or you get a little sniffles, you don't need to run down to the doctor for that. Second thing, healthcare savings accounts. It need to be as easy as a passbook savings account where you can save the dollars tax-free. And the third thing is some realistic tort reform. Let's get our doctors out of the defensive medicine business. That will fix. When people have skin in the game again, when we're paying for it out of our own pocket, we'll quit wasting our healthcare system's assets, they are a limited resource, and start paying attention to the true cost.
Dave Funk, Republican of Des Moines, and put your skin in the game in the final 10 minutes of our program, 1-866-780-9100. If you hear something you agree with or disagree with or would like to question, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Here, broadcasting today from the Java House in downtown Iowa City, and we have a question from an audience member. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you guys, too. My name is Zach Walls. I'm a freshman here at the university. And, I've really enjoyed listening to you guys today. Like most of you, I'm a pretty ardent capitalist. I believe in the free market. I love my country. I'm an Eagle Scout, and I'm really proud to call myself an American and an Iowan. And I don't know if you've seen this, but the Des Moines Register had a poll out a few weeks ago, I think, that said 92% of Iowans feel that they haven't been affected by gay marriage since the ruling. And I know that if I'd been asked that question, I definitely would have felt very affected. My mothers were married last October, and it was a tremendous moment for us. And so my question for you guys is, how do you guys feel, party of limited government, individual rights, feel about gay marriage in Iowa?
Who wants to tackle that?
Personally, Joe. I don't see gay marriage as a problem. I see that, homosexuals should have the right to be married just as heterosexuals should. But I don't think that really is a core Tea Party movement that the whole movement's going to stick to.
It's certainly an issue here in Iowa on the level that a lot of people are bringing up. Tamara, what would you say about that? Are you in favor of same-sex marriage?
I would go back to my biblical roots, which was the foundation that the founding fathers built the premise of this country upon. And when we look to the fragmented families, other than a biological, we know studies show that the best thing for a child is a biological two-parent home. And we see that not only is it just a social issue, but it's fiscal. And that's why we're here, as much of the economic issue. We spend $280 billion a year on fragmented families that are children outside of a two-parent biological home. That's $1 trillion a decade that it costs this country.
Well, Zach said he has two mothers. Zach, what about that? You have a fragmented home?
Both are employed by the university. They're in the medical field. I mean, we're a pretty well-off family, actually. I've got friends, who I've met through this who come from families that are whole. I'm a donor-inseminated child, so you know, I know there are lots of families that don't come from same-sex parent families that are in this situation, too.
Do you ever long to see your biological father? You feel like you're missing anything?
Not really, no.
I mean, I was sounds like we're cooking up a whole other talk show here. Jeff, from
Dubuque. The way I look at it is I don't care where you fall in on the issue. Doesn't bother me one bit. But let the people vote. Don't let the court decide.
Well, following the basic tenet of limited government, where does government have a place in telling me who I should or shouldn't marry?
No place whatsoever.
Ed, the libertarian,
says... From the libertarian point of view, the slippery slope we stepped on a long time ago is allowing and permitting the concept that government could define interpersonal relationships. It has no business defining interpersonal relationships.
Our time is running short. There's a lot of things we could say about all these issues. We're skipping through them quickly. I realize that. Let's go to Ron in Bettendorf, who's on the line. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, hi. Not going to take a whole lot of time. Just throwing this question out with a desire for an opinion from the group. Public financing of elections.
We have public financing of the elections, get all this private money, especially with the Supreme Court ruling now that corporations can act as people in some to some degree in our elections. We're waiting to see what happens in the fall. Dave Funk, publicly financed elections, as
absolutely
they do in the European states, for instance.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Why not? Because elections are about the exchange of ideas. It's a competition in the arena of ideas.
You don't have the money to get your idea out of there, some might say. What good is it to have a good idea if I don't have
when you do that, you set strict limits. Okay, for instance, Leonard Boswell just put out a piece of literature, actually, in our district that was paid for on the back by the U.S. taxpayer, and all it was a glossy slick campaign slick. That is him using his office to do it. And so when he can do that, and it trumps any, say they give you $10,000 for an election, they give him $10,000, and then he gets to produce as many glossy slicks as he wants. It just creates a power of incumbency.
Ed, chair of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. Where do you fall on this question, public financing of elections?
Positively not. Obviously, public financing implies that government bureaucrats are going to control the flow of that money, and incumbents will have a necessary advantage even greater than they already have. You spoke before of disenfranchisement of voices because of the hurdle of raising enough money. A thumb rule I hear repeatedly is that a non-incumbent has to raise $10 for every dollar that an incumbent raises in order to even wage a parity challenge to even get in the game. With government funding controlled by bureaucrats who in turn have political connections to the incumbents, the deck will be stacked even more ferociously against challengers.
Okay, let's go to another audience member here at the Java House. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Zach. I'm also a student at the university. I pretty much can speak for any college student and ask, you know, what are your guys' views on rising tuition, the ridiculous costs of tuition nowadays?
Some are questioning whether our public universities, such as the University of Iowa, ISU, UNI, are public anymore in the true sense because they're not that affordable anymore. Who wants to tackle that?
When's the last time your professors have taken a pay cut?
Well, I would actually...
Are there unions in higher education? I don't know.
When I actually... I happened to have run for office in 2008, and one of the things I had proposed was that after school, and this is hopefully to keep people in Iowa as well, that after school, every dime you pay to the state goes directly back. You sign a little form, and instead of paying it, those go directly back to paying student loans. Another thing we can do is work with businesses to provide internships so you don't have 2 years of electives that you're just wasting and throwing away on spinning class or whatever you want out there, and that will reduce costs by working almost in a private sector way through the public universities on that type.
We have just a couple more minutes left. I want to get to this question. What impact will this movement have on the midterm elections coming up within our state? There are no Dave, you are in the field for the 3rd Congressional District.
Right. Congressneedsfunk.com. It's easy to find our website. Got to get that shameless plug in. Who knows? We'll know in the primaries. We'll know this fall.
Let me ask Ryan Rhodes, as an organizer, not as a political a politician here, what do you see the influence at this point on this coming election by the Tea Party?
I think like he said, you're really going to see a lot of it in June 8th and then come this general election. There's one more. You're right. A lot. There are a lot of Tea Parties who may lean towards and the takeover, if you will, of the GOP. And basically, if we get a lot of our candidates espousing and fulfilling their limited government promises, I think you will see a rise in Republican numbers. But if they don't, you may very well see a third party in 2012, 2014.
Let me throw this question out. If the Tea Party had to put forth a candidate right now, we're fast-forwarding to before 2014 for president. Who comes the closest now to being a prime candidate for the Tea Party's presidential bid?
I think without a leader, again, we don't have an agenda, we don't have a platform. You have individuals with the creativity and independence that really made our country great.
I'm going to give a shameless plug for someone I think identifies a lot.
You're not going to say Dave Funk?
No. Okay. Congressman Mike Pence, who has stood by, he stood against No Child Left Behind, he stood against Dee Dee Scozzafava, and he's time and time again bucked the basic norm of the Republican Party and gone to a way and practiced a lot of what he preached. So that's my shameless plug for him for 2012.
Okay.
And my shameless plug would be whoever the Libertarian Party selects.
Very good. Maureen writes us an email. Although I agree with some of the viewpoints regarding fiscal responsibility and free markets, I am disturbed by some of the comments by individuals. She writes Tom Credo at the convention. I fear the fringes in all parties. She's speaking to you? What can you say to her fears?
It's kind of hard to address her question because we're all individuals, and since this isn't a political party with a true set forward platform that, you know, we're going to run this candidate and run on this policy or that policy, you're going to find all sorts of those people in every political party. You're going to find people that are fringe on the left and on the right in the Republican Party. You're going to find people that are fringe on the left and the right in the Democrat Party. It's just the way it is.
We have to go. Thank you very much to all of our guests for taking the time to travel to the Java House in downtown Iowa City to be on our program talking about the Tea Party. I want to thank you all. I don't have time to name all your names again, but thank you. We appreciate the effort.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt with help from Lindsay Moon today. Jim Davies is our chief engineer. Nate Schultz, our assistant engineer. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Podcast and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Mr. Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for all the participation on this trial show. We got outside our studio walls. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.